So this is an interview with Evan Williams, also known as Snow Williams, on Saturday the 11th of October 2014. The interview is for the Canterbury History Foundation, funded by the 2014 Canterbury Community History Award. The interviewer is Kim Newth. The interview is being recorded at 5 Corbett Crescent at the Anthony Wilding Retirement Village. The interviewer will also be taking shorthand notes during this interview. This is file number F001. And I just wanted to start, Evan, with some basic details, such as your date of birth and place of birth. So if you can maybe...
Yeah, I was born in Waimate on the 6th of February 1925.
Right. And do you know why you were named Evan? Was that a family name or...?
Well, this is going to be a funny sort of an interview because my first name is Evan, and that was the name of the street in which my paternal grandparents lived in Timaru. Mm-hmm. And Hugh is my second name, and that's the name of the street where my maternal grandparents lived in Waimate.
Oh, gosh, so it's very much placing you in the landscape, isn't it?
But I think it's quite fitting.
Yes, yeah. Now, people also know you as Snow Williams. So when were you first called Snow and how did that...
Actually, it was in the Home Guard and I was just a kid, 16.
Yes.
And these First World War guys... all in their 50s were in the Home Guard and I was just a kid. And they just called me Snow and it carried on right through my whole army life.
Right,
in fact, a lot of people don't even know my name.
Yeah, I know, that's interesting, isn't it? Because,
no.
So what do you think of yourself as primarily?
Well, I'm easy. I'm happy people call me Snow or Evan. I manage to recognise it most of the time.
Yes. So what are your, what were your parents' names?
My dad was George Trezise Williams.
Gosh, how do you spell that?
T-R-E-Z-I-S-E. It's a Cornish name. His folks had come out from Cornwall.
So they were English, his parents?
Cornish.
Yes.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. My mother's name was Flora Helen Stewart. Her father was a refugee, I would think, from Scotland. Her mother's maiden name was... Oh, I'll tell you in a minute. No, I can't.
So when you say refugee from Scotland...
Oh, he was a bit of a rascal.
Oh, okay. And,
he was actually a qualified surveyor, but he worked in New Zealand as a shepherd.
Right, okay.
Yes.
And so how old were they when you were born?
Mum had been a nurse, and she was 23 or 24. Dad was a bit older.
And what did he do?
He was an accountant. And the stock and station agent.
Right. And so they are both, did they both grow up in South Canterbury?
Yes.
Yes. And you did talk about having other siblings, so how many other children were there in the family?
Three of us. I had a brother older than me. He had Down syndrome.
So what year was he born?
A couple of years before me. 24, and a sister who's younger, and she had hydrocephalus, which is used to be called water on the brain.
Yes.
So we're a bit of a dysfunctional family in a way.
So what was your brother and sister's names? What were they?
My brother was Stuart, S-T-E-W-A-R-T. Mm-hmm. And my sister was Eve Ann.
With an E?
Eve, E-V-E-A-N-N. Two
right.
words.
Right, yes. And so you were the middle child.
I was.
Yeah. So this, these health, you know, issues in the family, and that must have had quite an impact on the life of the family then. I mean, were you expected to take on some of the responsibilities of care?
A funny thing to ask.
Mm.
Looking at it from the outside,
mm.
I would have difficulties. When you're me, it was normal. There was I didn't know anything different.
Mm. Mm.
And I remember at high school or primary school, I was in fights every day with kids teasing my brother. And that was permanent. Always fighting, going home with torn socks and torn clothes.
That's really harsh, isn't it?
No, well,
so there wasn't any special... Was he given any special help at that time?
Not at that time, no.
No. So I think you mentioned earlier that you'd taught him to read.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah. He read all of the newspaper, front page right through the back.
Gosh, yeah.
Mm.
So...
that's helped me in my life too.
Mm. Are either of them still alive?
Oh, no.
And your parents, I guess, would have been obviously. So you were a child also during the Depression years, weren't you? So
yes.
How did your own, you know, how did your family get through those years just from an economic
point of view? Dad was working
in
Pinegall Guinness, and we didn't have that sort of problem, although we didn't have much money.
Mm.
And my folks didn't get a radio until I was about 15 years old. There certainly no thought of
no
entertainment.
Luxuries.
No, none at all.
Did you go on holiday very often or anything like that?
No, I don't recall.
No, yeah. I mean, they were hard years for everyone, weren't they, really?
We actually, when we moved to Timaru and things got a bit better, we... We'd go to Waimate for a holiday with our grandmother. That was...
That was 1930, wasn't it, I think you said earlier that you moved to Timaru, the family moved
1930.
To Timaru. And that was a whole family moved,
So
that was for your dad's work,
Work,
was it?
Yeah.
And so you went to school in Timaru, didn't you? Was it... so which schools again?
Waimataitai Primary and Timaru Boys High Secondary. I remember my mother's maiden name. Now it's gone.
Mm. No, that's okay.
Silly.
So you went to Timaru Boys...
Her folks were Danish anyway.
Right, yes, yep. So with Timaru Boys High School, did you excel in any particular academic subjects? Were you a studious boy?
I don't know why I went to high school, because I didn't know the need for trigonometry, geometry, Latin, French, and they were the courses that I took. It didn't seem to have any relevance to what I would ever be doing in my future, and I just didn't know how to study that sort of stuff.
Mm.
I needed a reason or a purpose to be able to do it. And in later years, when I had a reason to know something about law, I was able to study it, the appropriate law, and I was able to argue it. But without a purpose for these things, I was lost.
Did you... find other things to do instead, I guess, or to focus on energy, like sports, or were you...
I used to go down to the wharf and to ruin fish. I was supposed to be at school. no, I was a bad student.
Just didn't see it, didn't see that it was taking you anywhere, that's really it, wasn't it?
I didn't know where I was going.
Did you have any, were you close to any particular... kids at school? Did you have best mates?
Oh, yes, I had best friends, and they came and stayed with me, you know, slept over and things like that. I was very fortunate with my friends, and they were very supportive. For that, I was grateful.
So school wasn't necessarily a great preparation for life, though, really.
No, it was a big round zero.
Right, yeah, yeah. So you would have been at Timaru Boys High School when war was declared.
Yeah, 38, 39, 40.
So how did you feel about New Zealand getting involved at that time? I mean, what were people saying?
I didn't really know much about that.
No. Can you remember how, you know, boys of your age talked about it, or, you know, what people said, your friends, what they were making of it?
No, but strangely enough, while I was still at high school in 1940, we had school cadets, which I enjoyed. I enjoyed the drills. I enjoyed rifle drills. We had an exercise in which we were the enemy and had to go just south of Timaru to confront a military exercise which had started up near Cave, and enjoyed that thoroughly.
Right. So how many, how much time went into that every week, if you know what I mean? Was it something that happened after school,
That was just an occasional sort of thing, yeah.
And who took those sessions? Was it the army or...?
The school ran them under the supervision of the RSM the barracks in Timaru.
RSM, what does that?
Regimental Sergeant Major.
Right, sorry.
That's all right.
So that was something... That's all right, yeah. Was that something that seemed...
liked it. I enjoyed that.
Yeah, And so in terms of how the war started to have an impact on the life of the school, I mean, were there... Did you start to lose teachers, you know, and that sort of thing, in terms of people enlisting and...
Well, as I say, I wasn't a very good pupil.
No.
And I didn't take much interest in what was going on at school. And I actually left school very early, and I was working in Lane Merck Wool store in Timaru, and a recruiting officer came round to get people to join the Home Guard. I was 16, coming up 16, and on the day I was 16, I actually joined the Home Guard.
Yes, I was going to get to that in a minute. So what did your parents, what was their reaction to when war, you know, when declaration of war took place?
Well, Mum wasn't very happy. She'd lost a brother in the First World War.
What was his name?
Lochiel Stewart, L-O-C-H-I-E-L. He was killed just before armistice.
What sort of service was he, or where was he?
I couldn't really tell you much about it.
No, yeah. Yeah, so it just brought memories back for her, I guess,
that's
of
right.
losing
and,
him.
And also my grandmother, she never ever forgot losing her son in the First World War.
So your father, had he served, or was he too young?
He'd been in the army, but they chucked him out because he had hammer toes. Now, that's sort of the second toe. It was quite a steeple. Apparently he couldn't march. I'm sorry for him because he missed out on a great experience.
How did he spend the war if he wasn't able to?
He was still working at Pargill Guinness.
Right, yeah. Yes. Okay, well, perhaps we'll just pause it here and then we might get on to the Home Guard, although we've only really done 14 minutes so far, so we might just keep going for the time being.
It's okay. Fine,
so you're happy to start talking about the Home Guard. Mm. So you joined the Home Guard at on your six, pretty much on your 16th birthday.
No, on my 16th.
On your 16th birthday, so that was 6th of February 1941.
Right.
So tell me again why you were, you know, so keen to join the Home Guard.
Well, for the first time in my life, it seemed as though there was a purpose.
Mm.
I was able to do something. I was able to be independent of my family, make my own decisions, and perhaps be more part of society.
Mm. What was the process involved of joining? So it was literally a case of what?
And the piece of cake. You signed a bit of paper and we were attested by Captain Pennyfather and we were in.
So was there a recruitment office or something, was there? Or?
No, they came round to the wool store where I was working.
Right, okay. So that was very easy.
Yeah.
So
I was in the signals unit.
The
signals.
Signals unit, okay. Oh, yes, yep.
And I had to start learning semaphore and Morse code.
And was that, who taught you?
We had some old blokes from the post office. They used Morse code for sending telegrams from one place to another. And they were First World War vets, hard cases, and we had to learn pretty quickly our Morse code.
So you were given, I guess, did they just teach you a certain number of, a certain amount at a time, and then you had to, you know, be tested on it? Does it work like that, or was it sort of
no
throw a book at you, or...?
No books.
No books, yeah.
We had to listen and listen and listen and keep working to keep up with them. Mm. And it seemed to work very well too.
Yeah. So were there many, you know, other kids from school? Did they...
Only one other guy that I knew closely... although another couple joined later.
Yes. So it was really all new. There weren't, you know, you didn't know. So most of the men would have been. It was mostly older men.
Yeah. Age 50.
Yes.
Plus.
So what was that like for you as a young?
I can tell
young
you,
man being thrown into the deep end.
Tell you what, it was a big learning curve.
Mm.
I grew up very, very quickly. Mm. They were great, these old blokes. They even took me to the pub with them after parades. The licensing was a different thing in those days.
Yeah.
And I sat very quietly in the back of the group and didn't say a word.
Learned a
didn't
lot.
didn't draw attention to myself.
No. Yeah. And how real did the prospect of invasion seem through 1941 and 42? Oh, I mean, obviously, I guess once Pearl Harbor had happened and...
It was very real.
Mm.
We were dead serious that in the event of an invasion, we were going to kill Japanese.
Mm.
And we... learned bayonet drills and we fired rifles and there weren't going to be any shortcuts.
Mm.
And we had exercises out in the country to sort of get us battle fit.
Yeah. Do you need to have a drink or something? Or... Oh, you're okay. Yeah. Mm. Do you want to stop for a moment?
No.
You're okay. Yeah. So, yeah, it's Yeah, so it wasn't obviously just the Morse code. It was a lot of other, you know, it was considerably...
Oh, we had telephones which were cut down wall flight phones in the 1940s or early, late 30s era. Mm. They were just put in wooden boxes, very heavy, and... we had to lug these things around.
Mm-hmm.
We had wire to run because that's how phones work. We didn't have radio.
No.
If we were in the country, we'd use fence wire for our wire instead of having to run wire out great distances.
So how did that work, fence wire? Do you mean you connect, hooked up
to a
and that worked as
the second piece of wire down, barbed wire, and then the next one was the one that we used. And we would connect up from one paddock to another.
Right. So you'd use the in effect, the fence wire would take the... signal or whatever.
That's right.
Oh, gosh. I've never heard of that before.
No, well, I'm just going to surprise you now.
Yeah.
In one exercise we were in Victoria Park.
Was this in Timaru?
In Timaru.
Mm.
The enemy were approaching and somebody had the bright idea, goodness knows who, was that all the phones and the link would wind the handles and generate electricity. When the people were getting through the fences, they were getting electric shocks. And that really put them off. It sounds crazy.
It does,
now,
yeah. Mine's just quite clever thinking, isn't it?
Yeah.
So I was going to... you talked about being independent. You like the independence of being the Home Guard. So you were initially still living at home.
Oh, yeah.
Yes, and that was in early 1941. But then I think you talked about your parents moved to Christchurch.
My folks moved to Christchurch and I was left in Timaru.
Right. So and you talked about having moved to a boarding house, I think.
Yeah, Beverly House.
Beverly House. Yes.
That was brilliant.
Yeah.
At the time, also, I was working at Assistant County Clerk, Levels County Council, which is quite a change from not being a good student. I was able to learn local body law, driving licences, and all the things that I needed to know in a local body at a very young age. So.
Yes, yeah. Because I was going to say that wouldn't have... Being in the Home Guard wasn't paid initially, at least, anyway,
no,
was
no,
it?
Never
it was
paid,
entirely
no.
voluntary, wasn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah,
and
yeah.
The county clerk was also in my same unit, so we got along pretty well.
Oh, that helped, didn't it?
Yeah.
So what was his name?
George Bird. George Basil Bird.
Right, okay. And
he also
so had your parents...
Also came from my Maddie originally.
Right, that helps, doesn't it?
Yeah.
So had you known him
no.
before you joined
no,
the council?
Yeah.
No, yeah. So what did your parents think about you staying on in the Home Guard? And, I mean, did they sort of encourage you to...
I think they realised they were powerless over me, that I was going to live my own life. And not unkindly, we grew apart and I did become independent. Although in many ways it was great to have their background support in my life.
Yeah. And had they moved to Christchurch again because of your dad's work?
Yes.
Yeah, okay. Yeah, so Beverly House, yeah, tell me about Beverly House and what that was like as a...
Oh, it was originally owned by the Lecrene family. It was an original clay wall building, 2 foot thick, very old and very substantial. It had been added to over the years, and it was a boarding house run by Mr. and Mrs. Hogg.
H-O-G-G.
Yeah. And it was an ideal place for me because they also knew my folks,
mm-hmm.
and they were able to keep an eye on me. Not that I did anything too risky in my early years.
No. And so was it your parents that found that for you, if you know what I mean?
Yes.
Yeah. Okay. And that was in Waiete Road, I think.
That's
you
right,
said.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's now the RSA, South Canterbury RSA.
Right. Yeah. And so were there many others from the Home Guard in there at all, or was it just... okay.
I was there with a lot of old people.
Right. So did you just have a bedroom there? Or
yeah,
okay. And so what about meals? Were they provided?
Yeah, provided.
Right.
And
yeah.
Laundry.
Right, okay. So you weren't having to do all of that side of it so much. But still, it must have been quite a steep learning curve in a way to be exciting, though, I suppose, to be living your own life. And
I didn't have any girlfriends, so
no.
I had to have something to be excited about.
And so... yeah, because so you talked about doing the job. So the Home Guard initially was, because you were working, was it like weekends and evenings?
Oh, evenings, yeah.
How many hours a week?
I couldn't tell you. A long time ago.
Yeah, yeah. But there would have been a routine where you would have spent a couple of hours in the evening.
We had weekend camps.
Yeah. So did you always meet at the same place? Like, was there a hall where you met or something like that?
Yeah. Yeah.
Can you remember what that was?
The barracks in Timaru.
So where were they?
Oh, dear. Down past Trinity Church. I forget the name of the street.
Yeah, yeah. And so what particular sorts of... in a normal weekend, what sort of things would you have done? You talked about the bayonet practice and that sort of thing. Do they start... with a drill
started with a drill.
Yes.
Yeah. That reminded us we were soldiers, not just tearaways having fun with a rifle. discipline was something new for me. But all the guys respected the officers and senior NCOs. While we were drilling and on the job. Mm. Afterwards, it was quite different.
Right,
It was first names, and these blokes knew each other pretty well.
And the particular responsibilities of your unit being signals, so did that mean when you were having these mock exercises that you had a particular role, if you know what I mean? How did that come into play?
Well, being the young guys, of course, we had to do a lot of the donkey work, and our Morse code wasn't all that good. so we were there to do whatever was given to us to do.
Right. Yeah, so it wasn't just it might involve a lot of lugging things around and
wire,
quite hard physical work
rolls
sometimes.
Of wire.
Right, yeah. And so did you have any, apart from the Morse code stuff at the start, was there any other kind of induction training or, you know, like a...
Did I not mention semaphore?
Oh, semaphore. So what was it?
That's with flags.
Right, okay.
Thank goodness we never used them.
You think we'd have just confused each other?
Well, you'd have to be seen and to stand up in front of enemy fire waving a flag. Didn't seem to be a very good idea.
No, you'd feel very exposed, wouldn't you? Yeah. And so in your particular little, you know, unit, was it a certain number of men, if you know what I mean? Was it how many?
I don't remember.
No.
That was... I didn't have to know that.
No. And would you have had an area officer? Do you remember? No. Yeah. And did you ever see much of other platoons in the area?
Only when the battalion paraded. But because we weren't riflemen, we were signals. We didn't do a great deal of parading with the rest of the battalion. We were more specialists, in a sense.
Right. Yes. So the men you served with, you've told me a bit about them. So a lot of them would have fought in the First World War.
Yeah.
Most of them, probably. Yeah. So what did you learn, you know, mostly from them, given that they'd been through that experience, and they obviously took you under their wing, by the sounds of it. Would that be fair to say?
What did I learn? I learned, first of all, about discipline and obeying commands.
I just had this horrible feeling that... Yeah. That's all right. We'll just might pause for a minute.